You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, December 9th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter will be joining us to look back on the week that was and probably will be again next week and then the next week after that. Just a constant hamster wheel of tragedy. Is that the best way to start the show? Like I say, it's Casual Friday. So casual, I forgot to get a guest to give us a movie recommendation. What are you going to do? Also on the program today, college campuses, Trump supporters demand safe spaces. This is the
I don't want to be told that I'm racist. I want to have a little corner to bash Muslims.
And fresh off an attack by the president electoral, Mr. Donald Trump, Boeing gives $1 million to the inauguration. New York Police Department admits it's been hiding records of undercover surveillance of Black Lives Matter.
Not that surprising.
And surprise, surprise, new poll shows Trump voters stunningly ignorant of some basic facts of reality.
What?
Meanwhile, Clinton's lead in the popular vote is now over, now at 2.7 million, but trailing in electoral votes by 36. So, and Republicans are primed to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but what they're really going to do is give a huge tax break to people making over $250,000 a year. So congratulations to those folks. To the rest of you, suck it.
It's our core brand proposition.
They're not going to be talking about it. That's the beauty of that little move, is that some people are going to get like a little, they're going to get a, it's like getting like a Christmas card.
A but
they're
not, wink.
It's like instead of coming to school with Christmas cards to hand out to all your friends, your parents are they're going to say, okay, you know, if you go to school and you just hand out your Christmas cards to five people, everybody else is going to feel bad. So what we're going to do is we're going to have somebody hand deliver them outside of school to their homes. They'll know it's from you. And meanwhile, the Senate Democrats are threatening a shutdown. I'm going to talk to Cliff about that because it centers around what is the best strategy to deal with, not just deal with Donald Trump. I mean, you know, and this is the thing that really, I want to save this. I'll save this to yell at Cliff about. But the thing that really, you know, bothered me about the Clinton campaign, which at the time I thought was just a missed opportunity as opposed to could cost her the campaign. And missed opportunity, obviously, not necessarily her opportunity. It was a missed opportunity for me to appreciate what she was doing, was to run against Donald Trump as if he was a Republican. In other words, promote, and her policy set that she had on her website and had during the primary, it wasn't it didn't reach where I wanted to go to, but it was certainly good enough to argue with Republicans about. And it was good enough to move the ball forward in some areas. And the idea of introducing, you know, free college, even though it was means tested. The idea of expanding Social Security, even though it was means tested. I mean, on and on and on like that. But paid parental leave. I mean, there were arguments to be had with Donald Trump, not as the horrible, disgusting pig that he was and is. But to me, you know, that's like, I think, fairly self-evident to a lot of people. And to some people, it's completely irrelevant. To Trump voters, it's completely irrelevant. The racism, the misogyny, completely irrelevant.
Maybe even a benefit.
Maybe also, yeah, a feature as opposed to a bug. But they never wanted to argue politics. They never wanted to argue policy. And the question is now, when we look to stop a Donald Trump, it's not we're looking to just stop Donald Trump. I mean, really, you know, I mean, listen, if Donald Trump, I mean, I guess the let me put the question this way. If Donald Trump was to actually come out tomorrow and say, I'm going to ram through Congress free college education.
Down your throats.
Down your throats. For everybody. What would we do? I mean, I think we should support that. Even though it's Donald Trump. So and that's obviously an extreme case that will never, ever, 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 ever happen. Although Betsy DeVos, who knows? I mean, she's a billionaire. Who knows?
That's totally. I mean, joking. We just have no idea. But, it's a giant gamble.
The point being, is it better to fight Donald Trump or is it better to fight against the Republican policies, the right-wing policies that are going to be horrible for people? And I think the answer is the latter. And they're not always going to be mutually exclusive. Very often they won't be. But and we'll talk about that in the context of the Democrats shutting down Congress. Excuse me, not shutting down Congress, but shutting down the government by not signing on to pass this sort of punt, this continuing resolution of the budget. And speaking of budgets, it's that time of year again where everyone spends more than they should to get people presents. And then also go to the mall and, I don't know, where do people go buy presents for Christmas?
Often the mall.
There you go.
I'm actually surprised. You're pretty on target with this.
I've heard that people do this when they buy presents for people. But here's the good news. No matter who you're shopping for, Shari's Berries is the one-stop shop for everyone on your list. Everyone. I don't even know if I can actually read this copy because all I'm thinking about is that chocolate-covered strawberry I had. I have a real problem with this.
Yeah, you have a sweet tooth, man.
Oh, my God. It's not even a sweet tooth. It's a real problem.
It's a compulsive tooth.
Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, weeks away, ladies and gentlemen. Are you going to want to shop and wrap and then deliver your gifts? No. Choose a gift from Shari's Berries, incredible collection of gifts, and go ahead and skip the crowds and the hassle altogether. I think I have one and a half of them. But the strawberry, the chocolate-covered strawberry I had.
It's delicious.
But the strawberry itself was actually delicious. The chocolate was great. The combination is crazy, but the strawberry was really a good strawberry.
Strawberries are my favorite fruit.
That's also with Myla.
Bon, bing, boom.
Look, you can choose berries dipped in tempting white, milk, and dark chocolate goodness. topped with chocolate chips, decorative swizzles, chopped nuts, an incredible, unique gift that's perfect for sharing. Though I have to say, I was very reluctant to do so myself. Sherry's Berries has more than just berries. They've added new seasonal treats just in time for the holidays. You get to choose the delivery day, and Sherry's Berries will deliver your gift fresh and on time, guaranteed. Christmas, Hanukkah, right around the corner. There's only one way to get this amazing $19.99 Sherry's Berries deal and help support this program. Visit berries.com, berries as in berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right-hand corner and type in my code, Majority Report. Sherry's Berries has something for everyone in every taste. Again, go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in Majority Report. Order them today. Somebody tweeted at me, said that the story about my grandmother, about the shaving, prompted them to get Harry's razors.
That's adorable.
And I wanted to write back, my grandma would be happy, but I don't think she would have appreciated any of it.
Frankly, I don't care.
No, I don't think she would have cared. I think she would have just sort of nodded her head and pretended like she understood what I talked about. The most in-depth conversation I had with my grandmother about anything. I mean, we loved each other. I think she loved me. I mean, she certainly acted like
you're speculating, frankly.
But the longest, most in-depth conversation we had started with at one point, like I shot some video of, this is, 20 years ago, of a holiday with my Uncle Saul and my grandma were there, and they're in their 90s. And she said, I hope that video comes out. I'm like, well, no, I mean, it's video. It's already, I'm not developing it. It's just, it already exists. And we talked about that for like 45 minutes. She had a very tough time to wrap around that.
But cute.
Look, the point is, when I shave now, I shave with Harry's. And I honestly think that if Harry's had been around when my grandmother was alive, it might have like improved her perspective on me a little bit. Because I wouldn't have shown up unshaven.
Hey, look,
anything
would have helped.
Anything would have helped. If you hadn't heard of them before, Harry's was started by two best friends, Jeff and Andy, who were fed up being overcharged for razors. So they started their own razor company to give people what they deserve, a great shave at a fair price. This holiday, Harry's has a ready-to-gift shave sets at all different price points, starting at $15. They all come with a razor handle of your choice, shaving cream, replacement blades, and a travel cover. Their Winston set includes an engravable chrome handle. If you want to add a personalized touch, ground shipping for the holiday ends December 16th. So act now. Go to harrys.com right now to get a holiday shave set. And don't forget to enter code Majority Report at checkout for $5 off. That's harrys.com, code Majority Report. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Cliff Schechter. And remember, folks, this show relies on its members. One of the benefits of the membership show is that you get more content. We're usually more amusing and funny, not as severe and angry. Usually,
it's more like, hey, the world's going to end. Ha ha ha.
Right.
Here's an impression.
Right, exactly. And there's plenty of people who sometimes say, like, you know what? I didn't want to hear that really dry interview you did with that person because of your own personal interest in that minutia detail of policy. So I skipped the first 45 minutes and went to the fun half that time.
You can go from the minutia hour to the fun half.
Yes.
The interviews are good.
I'm not saying they're not good.
That's a bad opinion.
No, I'm not saying that, but there are people who've said that. Good friends of mine who say that.
Oh, well, that's not nice.
No, I don't feel bad about it. That's
why
we do
it. Keeping it real.
But you also get the show commercial free. So, you don't have, and we don't have that many commercials, but lately we've had a lot.
I'm glad the show didn't exist when I was on Robben Island. Talk about Geneva violation.
Can you imagine how quickly they would have gotten Noriega out of that out of his bunker? If they just got
welcome
plagued.
Back, Sam Cedar. We're talking about budget outlays for Medicare. Okay, man, I give up.
Where do we get onto the Cures Act today? Honestly. All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll be oh, so anyways, you can join the Majority Report by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. And also, you can give it to a friend now, and you can do so by going to majoritygift.com. There's some other sites that lead there too that have that apparently Cuck Nation, Decuck Nation, other ones. But go to majoritygift.com and you can gift the show in any denomination. Of course, it's also on the website. And sign up for our newsletter. What we're doing now is every week we're sending you four or five stories that I've found to be highly relevant. Interesting reads for the weekend. So there. Go to majority.fm and sign up for the newsletter. All right.
Quick there, break. Grandma.
We'll be right we'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, even in this era, and we're not even quite in the era, although I guess we are. Although I will say, you know, Michael Moore did say, like, he thinks Michael Moore, who called the election sort of spot on. I mean, down to like the, I mean, just spot on. He was on Seth Meyers last night saying, you know, he's not president yet. Anything could happen. I don't know what he's planning to do. I don't know what he knows, but who knows? But even in this era of Donald Trumpism, ugh, this little ditty brings us back to a simpler, more naive time.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, the Cliff Schechter jingle by Jimmy Reefer Cake at All the Hypocrisy. I know Jimmy doesn't want to be seen just as a jingle guy. And he's not, but he does a great jingle. Hello,
well,
Cliff.
Damn good jingle.
I mean,
I'm not supposed to say that, I guess, because it's for me. But
no, you can compliment the.
You put someone else's name in there.
You could compliment
it would be
the jingle.
A damn good jingle too.
No,
I think
people get that. You can. You wear a nice suit, I guess. Theoretically, you can take the compliment. I don't.
Sure.
I don't know if I've ever done that, but.
Well, you know, it's the best. All the people are saying, I don't even have the strength to do a Donald Trump impression.
Well, all right, listen.
I'm exhausted by Donald Trump.
Just put your arrogance on check for a moment so that we can...
I'll put my arrogance on check for a moment and say, I think this was just this literally, you know, maybe it was from an hour or two ago. You saw about Gary Cohn?
Yeah. I know we're going to go over some of the nominees. And And, you know,
I just want to say, I mean, I know we wanted to go to something else, but how freaking hilarious it is. I may just sit here and tweet this at TCOT, you know, the right wing part of Twitter all day and laugh at them and just be like, Jew, Goldman Sachs and Jew, and really just taunt them. Because really, this guy did a phenomenal job of putting up that wall to block Goldman Sachs and the Jews to make the alt neo-Nazi right happy. Are there any Goldman Sachs guys that are not in this administration? I'm still looking.
I think ultimately this doesn't, you know, with a huge percentage of, I think, Trump followers, maybe 50% some odd. And we have some statistics that came out in this like a PPP poll that are just stunning in terms of the I don't know what to call it, the willful ignorance
Breath
about
of stupidity.
I mean, it's
60 to 18. They believe that millions of illegal aliens voted, or that's their term that they use, but let's call them undocumented workers.
Well, that is like at the very least. Well, I want to get into that polling. That at the very least is sort of in some ways unprovable, right? Like you actually, you know, it's plausible that could have been the case, and that there's this huge conspiracy to that I don't know, George Soros has paid billions of dollars to millions of people to hide the fact that that's like you still like I mean I can't provide proof for that, I guess, because you can't prove a negative, but it would one a reasonable person would assume that there would be evidence to the contrary. But there are other things, and I want to save them for a bit, that there's no calculation that one could... Ah, screw it. Let's just talk about it for now. There's no calculation you can make that would bring you to this conclusion if you had done... If you had any awareness of what the issue was. Like the idea that that... They wouldn't just say, I don't know for this. Let me just tell you what I'm talking about in terms of these pollings. And I saw these on, I read the poll, but some of these graphics are from Rachel Maddow's show. The unemployment rate under Obama has gone from, what was it? Like almost 10.2 or 3 or something like that. Down to 4.7. Now, with that said, we know that the employment participation rate has not recovered. Wages are stagnant, whatnot. But the unemployment rate, as measured by most, as measured by the government, right? I don't think like it has gone down by almost 6 points. Okay, under the and here's a little graph of it. I'm showing it on the video here. Okay. The number of Trump voters who think the unemployment rate has increased is 67%. 67%, almost 70% of Trump voters believe that the unemployment rate has increased during Obama's presidency. And now, that's just like, you know, if you, there's just no way, there's no, you know, there's no like, well, I mean, I guess they could say like that 70% are going like, well, are you doing U4 or U6? Because, all right, here's the other one. 40% of Donald Trump voters believe that he won the popular vote. 40%. Now, to be fair, I guess like, 70% of Democrats would say like Donald Trump shouldn't be president and didn't really win the presidency because of the Electoral College. But I don't think they would say that Hillary Clinton won the electoral vote. Here's the other.
Those are two different, very different things. It's what you think should determine who's president versus what reality is.
Republicans
aren't accepting reality.
Here's the other thing.
Don't know it. Yeah.
I'm not. And I'm agnostic about the performance of these things. But when Obama was inaugurated, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the stock market, that I think that's like most people perceive that as just that's the stock market, was at 7,949. So let's just call it 8,000. Today, It's at 19,600. I don't know what it is.
Towards 20,000, folks. That is correct.
And
clearly a terrible job done.
And Trump voters, 40% of them think that it has gone down under Obama. 40%. So when people talk about, like, we need to reach these people.
There's no reaching them unless you're willing to send a more compelling conspiracy theory their way that benefits you. I'm not saying there's no reaching any of the folks we're talking about, but this core kind of 40 to 60% of Trump voters, literally, as far as we're concerned, should just not exist. I mean, our policies will help some of them, and we should want to help people, but their concerns and their whatever it is that animates their daily lives should be of no interest to us. They don't live in reality. They won't live in reality. And if we try to go talk to them, it's a waste of our time.
A total waste of time. And you know, look, we know that there is a tremendous amount of data saying that North American population, 20 to 25% are authoritarians. I mean, that lines up fairly nicely when you look at the Trump voters that, 50% of them or so. I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they would still support me. And I
think in most cases with most of his people, that's exactly right. I think he made a very true statement there.
Yep.
I think he may lose a few here and there, maybe would have even lost enough to lose the Electoral College. But I think the bulk of his people, had he shot a random person on Fifth Avenue, would have stayed with him.
I'm not convinced that if they shot someone from their family that they wouldn't stay with him. I think they could even...
Right. And I'm not saying this for any hyperbole. This is what I actually believe, looking at all the numbers and everything.
I think that if it had come out that Trump is actually a secret Muslim, I honestly think that a lot of these people would start praying to Mecca.
I do too. Yeah, absolutely.
There would be mass conversions.
It came out that he basically was a secret Russian, and a whole lot of people that hated Russia suddenly loved Russia.
Mass conversions in this country.
Yeah.
Eid. That's the thing. If Trump ever comes out as a Muslim, that's the thing. Invest in, like, I don't know, go long on whatever they do to celebrate. Whatever. I don't know. What products would Eid, what would you get for
Halal
Eid?
Halal butchers, obviously.
I guess so. I don't know how you, I don't know.
Big league into Allah.
All right. But let's talk about this, Cliff, with that in mind. Okay. So Senate Democrats are threatening to force a brief government shutdown this weekend. Government funding is set to run out on Friday. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I guess, was contemplating a continuing resolution that would go through the end of April. That's basically when you have the budget and you just basically extend it to April. Joe Manchin is leading a fight to basically not pass this continuing resolution based upon the fact that there are about 16,000 miners, 12,500 former union miners and their families have been told that their health benefits are going to end January 1st, and an additional 10,000 are in danger of losing their benefits at a later date. And this basically comes from the fact that back in, like, I think it was the 40s, the United Mine Workers made a deal with the government that, and because at that time, I think it was probably coming out of World War II, very important, obviously, yeah, to national security, that union miners who put in at least 20 years would get lifelong pension and health benefits. Because one, I imagine the government's thinking, like, most of these people are going to die anyways after 20 years in the mines very
That's
quickly
true.
Because
Sadly.
Of what they've inhaled yeah. at that point. But, to basically, this national security, you honor their service, I guess, in some level. Well, so this had gone on, but in, I think about 5 years ago, one of the major coal producers in the country, Patriot, went into bankruptcy. Basically, they got released from their obligations to providing pensions. The mine workers negotiated a one-off $400 million payment in the bankruptcy court for the retiree benefits. thinking that, okay, we're going to have, we have that $400 million will buy some time for the U.S. government to step in and help these people. Senate Democrats, right. You know, introduced this Minors Protection Act a long time ago. Republicans are standing in the way of it. So now, basically, what Manchin is doing is saying to the Republicans, your president-elect promised minors that they wouldn't leave them in the lurch. Now's the time to pay up, and they're not doing it. And so what is interesting is that they're trying, the Democrats are trying to essentially tie themselves to Trump in this instance and saying, and leveraging Trump's promises, as opposed to saying anything that Donald Trump says is horrible, is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a way to fight back against Trump, I think it's a great idea. Look, he went out and made all these false promises about bringing mining jobs back, but more importantly, he culturally aligned himself with miners. Certainly, if you think about Joe Manchin, it's smart for him, for somebody who wants to get reelected in a very pro Trump state. But in addition to that, the way that the overall fight, whether it's policy or it's, you know, on other grounds, whether it's attacking Trump personally for various behaviors, it needs to be really reinforce, yes, continue to point out how he's terrible to all sorts of groups of people, but also to undermine him among many of middle and working class whites who voted for him.
But
and this is a way to do that.
But I guess what I'm saying is, should the agenda be to undermine Trump? I mean, ultimately, you want that to be a byproduct. But should the from a tactical and strategic standpoint? From a strategic standpoint, should the agenda be to undermine Trump, or should it be to simply promote policies that ostensibly the Democratic Party supports? Right. So,
well,
in other words,
you can do both at the same time.
Well,
right? We support health care for minors. You're promoting a positive vision there. This guy who claimed he was for minors and was going to protect their jobs and all the other crap he made up, you're showing that he's not. And then there's the policy implications, which are people going to lose their health care. And we're supposed to be for that.
All right. There are instances where both things can happen. They're not mutually exclusive. But what if Trump comes out and backs Manchin? Or what if Trump says, like, I agree with Manchin? I mean, what do we sacrifice there? The agenda of undercutting Trump, or the agenda of providing those minors with health care? And I'm suggesting, and I don't know where I've necessarily landed on this, but I think, you know, this is important to talk about, that that in that scenario, if the answer is in that scenario, well, you don't malign Trump in that instance. You maybe just ignore it or whatever, or maybe you appreciate it or whatever. However you handle that, it's more of a tactical response. But you don't undermine Trump there, right? You go for the policy. And if that's the instance when those two things clash, I wonder if that's not an indication of what should be happening going forward. In other words, like, you know, I'm looking back on what happened during the Bush years. And
yep.
Very often, it was always about hit Bush whenever you could. And I'm not talking about whether or not he deserved it or not. I think he did at every instance, and
yes,
Everyone associated with him. But the question is, in terms of efficacy, was that necessarily the best move? Now, off the top of my head, I can't come up with a policy that he supported necessarily that I think, but I'm sure there were a couple. That would have, in other words, what is paramount? Is it creating the political program that we want to espouse and then letting that be the thing that mows people down? Or is it go for the mowing people down? Because, like, you know, we have a limited amount of resources at any given point.
Sure.
Which one do we do?
But in this case, unless I'm misunderstanding something here, if you're threatening to shut the government down over this, and you're essentially pushing for these miners to get, to get health care that they deserve, in the end, if Trump comes out in favor of it, then in a way you've made him come to your side, and you're pressuring Republicans of the kinds that are going to want to cut all sorts of programs for people. You're putting them in a difficult situation too. I don't think it's just about Trump. I think it's that you know that they control everything now, even though they're a minority in everything of every vote everywhere. And so I think and their positions on all sorts of issues, healthcare, particularly Medicare, and these issues are massively minority positions. So I think in any case where you can try to get benefits for people that they should get, while also pointing out how heartless and ridiculous the Republican Party is, and maybe Trump will join you. But you know there's in this particular case, he may do it in other cases too. But then that, you know, what does that do with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan?
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, that creates more conflict with those guys, and conflict between Trump and them is only a good thing.
Well, that's what I'm. But that is the point I'm making. There is a subtle distinction here. I think maybe it's not that subtle. Even is that one? Do you promote a specific agenda, as opposed to making, funding institutions that are looking to fundamentally undercut Trump? In other words, I mean, you know, during the campaign, I kept arguing that she should be attacking Trump, not because he's a horrible human being, although, you know, to a certain extent she should, but she should be attacking Trump because of Republican policies, period. And I think that is, you attack the Republican policies because you're also espousing your own policies. And on some
level, what was frustrating is she could have espoused her own policies, contrasted them with Trump's and the Republican parties, and still could have pointed out very clearly that, you know, by pointing out that Trump's a horrible person, there's a grander narrative there about how this guy's a billionaire, how he's treated people who've worked for him. You know what I mean? How he's gone bankrupt because his economic ideas are bankrupt. I mean, they could have used him as a broader theme and, you know, nailed him personally about how disgusting a character he was, just as they could do on the way he treats women and the way the Republican Party treats women, including his running mate, when it comes to taking away bodily autonomy and taking away and not caring about equal pay. I think that Trump's many bad behaviors should have been part of the overall theme and should have been connected. And that is where one of the places where I think they didn't do it.
Right. And I guess
I don't think you had to choose one or the other is what I'm saying.
Well, give me a sense, like during the Bush years. I mean, I don't know. I got to go back and just really try and think about
it. Remember
this,
those?
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, and certainly I was working in the most sort of, boisterous quarters of this thing, right? Like, I mean, you know, on AM talk radio, we're trying to sell policy to a certain extent, but it's also, gets you a lot more mileage out of, you know, talking about how he supposedly choked on a pretzel and, you know, was undoubtedly wasted and passed out watching.
You had to mention stuff like that. It was too funny not to, where he had that bike accident.
That's right. But the question is like, you know, how much do we just, rather than attack the Republic, or I should say, you know, Trump, how much, rather than attack them, versus promoting I'm not trying to be sort of Pollyannish about this, but a positive agenda or a proactive agenda.
I just think you have to do both. And I think you have the capacity to do both. We don't have, you know, close to what the right has in terms of that capacity. But there are institutions that mostly exist to point out negative things going on with Trump and with Republicans. They exist. That should happen. Certainly, those should be amplified by members of Congress, and others. At the same time, though, you know, they should put together a very coherent, well-messaged, positive agenda of what here is what we think we should achieve. And President Trump has said that he's in favor of protecting workers and doing what's best, you know, for those that have in many ways been left behind in America. Well, here, this is a great way to do that. And I think it paints him into a corner because all the billionaires in his administration aren't going to want to do any of that stuff. And so I really do think, you know, it's one, you have a contrasting message and it's two sides of a coin where you have to be saying, here's what we see in a positive side. Here's why it's not happening because of what the other side is doing, which is wrong.
I think so. I mean, I'm going to, you know, at the very least attempt to just keep an eye and make sure I'm not, you know, floating too much into, you know, Cheeto territory with this guy.
It's very easy to.
It is easy to, but the assault is going to be coming from so many quarters. And it is so. With that said, let's talk about a couple of Donald Trump's cabinet picks. I can't even remember which ones I've talked about on this program because they've been all so horrific. How much did we talk about Scott Pruitt? I mean, Scott Pruitt, right? Is it Scott Pruitt? Yeah.
Yeah, minimally.
So let's talk. You want to start with Scott Pruitt? Because I think this is one of the most sort of and what's clear for me about all these picks is that Mike Pence is the guy making these picks. And I don't know Mike Pence per se, but the picks are coming. Like, Donald Trump has seeded the domestic agenda. He's completely outsourced this, it seems to me, because there's no way he could have had the sort of savvy to know to make these picks, frankly, because they're going to carry out like the Koch brother agenda so precisely and perfectly.
Well, especially Pruitt. I mean, you know, the guy that I think if he could eliminate the entire environment and have no environment at all would probably do that. There's a lot of what Reagan did, which, you know, which is putting people in areas to regulate things where they're actually there to undo the legacies
Yes.
of those very programs.
Totally.
Obviously DeVos has destroyed, you know, public education in Michigan. This Joker Pruitt is, you know, horrific when it comes to the environment. You're going to see that because they don't believe in the missions. I mean, you know, Sessions and the AG.
Right.
I mean, they don't believe in the actual missions of these cabinet positions of these agencies. So that is sort of the biggest part of it. And then there's also just the fact that so many of these people are incredibly wealthy, have absolutely no understanding of anybody other than people that live like them, and that they have zero experience in actually doing anything. You know, they're just oppositional figures, you know, in these areas. I mean, the Department of Education is supposed to make sure that our education system in this country is doing well. Well, Betsy DeVos has no interest in our education system doing well. She'd probably like to have us all going to religious schools.
Well, no. I mean, this is not, we don't even have to be, we don't even have to speculate about this. She has explicitly said, she has explicitly made the distinction, and she is, you know, she is a creationist. They are fundamentalists. They homeschooled their kids for a while and then sent them to private schools, parochial schools. She has explicitly said that she's in favor of public education, but against public schools. So, in other words,
right.
It is, we believe that we should give money, vouchers to people, charters is another way of undermining the system, so that they can go to, basically, to Christian schools. I mean, and that's the agenda. Understand, of course, that when that happens, the money that they're giving does not cover all the costs of private school. And so you're basically saying,
yes, they get little vouchers.
We will keep the public schools open as warehouses for poor people's children, but we will strip them of all their resources by making them deal with, pulling money out to give vouchers to people who can afford to augment it to go to a private school, usually a religious school. And we will make these schools even worse because we will concentrate poverty in these schools. And
right.
everyone who knows anything about education outputs in terms of what the schools produce in terms of students knows that it's a function of the inputs. And those inputs are dictated by one social factor more than others, than any other. And that is economic status. If you are poor,
right.
the chances of going into school and being at a learning deficit on day one is through the roof. And so that is the systemic attack on the institution of public schools, broadly speaking. It's not looking to improve them, public schools. It doesn't care about public schools. It sees them as a warehouse. It's looking to improve the educational experience of people who are not low income, and improvement in that instance is defined by at least the DeVosses as being a Christian education.
Right. Then there's also the elements of people that are, you know, are tied in to them who they see the whole school system as a big piggy bank, something to profit from. And then so there's that whole element in the school choice movement too.
Well, of course. I mean, it's not like those vouchers they're giving are going to either, you know, like either for-profit, maybe they'll be parochial schools, maybe they'll be run by churches, maybe they'll just be, you know, for-profit
right.
parochial schools.
I'm saying, though, I think there are some that are more motivated by the religious indoctrination, and then there are some that are motivated by simple crony capitalism. They're all terrible. And there, obviously there's an overlap
that's
there.
That's the beauty of the gospel doctrine, right? The what is it? The,
the prosperity gospel.
There you get a twofer.
If you're doing well, God meant that for you.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about Pruitt too, because here's the thing about the Pruitt pick that is so stunning. This guy Pruitt was essentially the lead attorney general of a couple attorney generals around the country, Republican attorney generals, who were working on, he was from the state of Oklahoma, who have been fighting the implementation of EPA regulations that they statutorily, the Supreme Court has said, they must implement. And so this guy is basically, to the extent that one can be an expert in this, is an expert at fighting against the statutory responsibility and duties of the EPA. So I want people to understand this distinction. It's one thing to put Ben Carson in at HUD, who has no idea what he's doing. Like, Ben Carson couldn't do, and that's basically the idea. It's like he's just going to have some broad edict where we're just going to give contracts to these people, and that's it, and somebody's going to tell him to do that.
You know what my theory, though, also on Ben Carson is? And I think there has to be truth to it. You remember Donald Trump's description during the campaign of cities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, urban centers were all hell holes, and you can't walk in your neighborhood, who he's talking to, without getting shot. I seriously think, you know, there's no qualifications there. There would be theoretical qualifications for HHS because he was a doctor, even though I don't think he knows a thing about policy. I'm not sure he knows a thing about anything. But I seriously think in Donald Trump's brain, it just was like, black guy, urban. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's as far as it went.
I think there's probably something to that as well. But I think the implications of him being there are just going to be you have someone who doesn't know how to steer the ship. Maybe there'll be a number two that they'll put in there that will figure out how to send money to the right people and whatnot. But at EPA, at the Environmental Protection Agency, they've put in a guy whose job is going to be, because what's going to happen is when the EPA does not maintain the standards that they're supposed to maintain, that they have a statutory, a legal, passed laws passed by Congress responsibility to do and regulate. Different
right.
states like California, New York, and Washington State, maybe Oregon, they'll sue the EPA for not regulating other states who are now, you know, have, I don't know if they'll be coal plants because coal's out of business basically anyways, but they're not regulating these other pollutants that could theoretically harm these other states. They're going to sue, and private individuals are going to sue the EPA.
Sure.
And his job is He's been picked because he's the expert at creating and thinking of and developing the legal principles to fight against those people who are going to sue the EPA to compel them to uphold the law. Like, he's put in there not just to be incompetent, not just to undercut it, but to fundamentally, legally deconstruct the entire foundations of the agency called the Environmental Protection Agency.
That's correct. Maybe the Koch brothers didn't have enough faith in Donald Trump after all.
Well,
I can't believe they could have wanted anybody better than this guy.
There is literally no, and there, you know, like there was an article in, yeah, I have it right here. Here it is. I think I showed this the other day. There's an article in New York Times, energy firms in secretive alliance with attorneys general. This is a New York Times piece from 2014.
Yep.
The picture on the front is a picture of Scott Pruitt. That's the picture of the guy. And
he's in the dictionary, I think.
His co-chair, when he ran for re-election for attorney general, was this guy, Harold Hamm, who is the president. I don't know if it's Harold Hamm or what. The president of one of these fracking companies. It was his co-chair of his campaign. All of these oil companies would write up documents to fight the Environmental Protection Agency's actions. And he literally would change like 30 words and just put the imprimatur of Attorney General from Oklahoma on the top of the page. I mean, this is, it's just,
yeah, he seems like a quality guy.
Extraordinary. It's
no, it is. And you know, lack of any kind of, you either have people that they're there to completely undo their agencies, and then, as you said, the other model seems to be people that just have no idea what they're doing, so they'll be incompetent enough to undermine their agency's mission anyhow.
Right.
You know, they're not trying to actively do it.
Right.
I mean, and then there's just, like, random crazy stuff. I mean, you know, the Bobby Valentine thing for Japan was hilarious.
I haven't dug into. I mean, look, you know, when
Bobby Valentine was a guy who spent a couple of years in Japan coaching, you know, managing a team. Otherwise, when he was with the Mets, pretty much got run out of town for being too obnoxious for New York. That's definitely a diplomat.
I think on a lot of the foreign policy stuff, I think the idea is just full on chaos. I think Bolton stopping by there, Bannon's in there. I think their attitude is just like, look, just put in people who will feel comfortable be there. You know, like, and you know, I don't know that Bramstead. He has a relationship with the Chinese leadership. He's been dealing with them, but it's all, you know, it's in, and it's very much about business and agriculture. But I think that they are just not taking the foreign policy. I think they think it's been treated too preciously and that it's not so fragile, and that the more sort of like insanity we put out there as a country, the more it's going to keep everybody in the world on their toes. Like, they're not going to know, like, this Bobby Valentine
unpredictability
thing.
Remember, you always
honestly
said that.
I honestly think that's what it is. It's a chaos theory. On that end.
Well, luckily, nothing ever really goes bad when there's chaos, so we can be happy about that.
Well, we're going to test that principle. I mean, that principle is going to be tested. It's going to be interesting to see how that winds up. Let's also just briefly just talk about the Secretary of Labor. Just so people know, like, that all of that that regulation that was changed by the Department of Labor, which basically afforded millions of more people overtime. For some reason, I mean, I got an IM yesterday, and I haven't been able to check it out. But this was basically stayed by a judge in Texas. And the Obama administration seems to have done nothing to fight that in any way that would do anything other than put it into the Department of Labor's court in February of next year. And we have a guy who literally has been on the opposite end of the raising the minimum wage battle. You know, the $12 an hour, $15 an hour debate seems rather quaint these days.
Hell, he just wants robots working. I don't even think he wants workers anymore.
Indeed. And, you know, the interesting thing is with that guy, there's some stuff, I guess, in his past personally that doesn't particularly look very good for him.
But I'll say this. I mean, and this is an important pattern, which is this is now the third potential member of the Trump administration who was accused of domestic violence, including Trump and Bannon, and now this guy, whose wives later recanted. What does that tell you? Because I'm sure that, I mean, I don't know, we know what it tells us, but I mean, so she's now saying that no, it never really happened, and she was just angry at the time, but I'm not so sure I believe that. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, regardless, I mean, you can't, if she's going to recant, but this guy, the interesting thing to me about this is that he's being attacked even by Breitbart because of his basically wanting to import workers to do because he wants to have low wage workers. Right. And so he knows that if like, hey, these guys in Mexico, they get $2 an hour. We can bring them up here and pay them $3 an hour. This is a win-win for everybody.
Oh, my God. It'll be like the best thing in the world to them.
And
yeah.
And so Breitbart's attacking him. I'm going to predict, make a prediction now about this guy, Pudzor, I guess his name is, or what?
It's hard to, I don't know.
He's going to be the one that gets thrown to the wolves. They're just
The ones who've come out so far, I'd be suspicious. He'd be also.
Yeah, I think that's the one that's going to make Trump look reasonable, where you're going to hear, where it's going to be reported by the major networks that he's conceded to the Democrats' desire to get rid of him.
Reasonable, and because it would be if he had to be, if he had to be voted in by the Senate, I think that could end up being Flynn. But because he's NSA, they can't do anything about that, and he can't be stopped. And so I think this guy seems like sort of. I mean, it's hard. Who's the next craziest? You know, and whatever. But I think it could be this guy. So there you go.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that the Democrats have no ability to stop any of the nominees. There's no filibuster anymore for presidential nominees.
It has to be, you know, the response has to be loud enough and convince enough people that the semi-sane Republicans that are left are willing to vote against whoever it is, and that you hold the line on Democrats. And I think I could see that happening in one or two cases. In most cases, they're just not going to be able to do it.
Indeed. All right,
and
Cliff.
With that uplifting note.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll talk again next week, Cliff. I'm sorry. I feel like I was pretty jacked this week.
It's been an interesting one. Let's put it that way.
Indeed. All right, folks. All right. Cliff, thanks so much. I appreciate it, buddy.
Take it easy. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I feel like I got a little head out on my skis with Cliff today.
No, Cliff, you don't understand. We learned this from Bush, God damn it.
I mean,
my glasses fell off.
You're very excited.
I was very excited.
It's good, though.
What do you
mean
my glasses fell off?
It means you're moving.
What does that mean?
Just Saul Rosenbergism. That's it. Oh. We're moving. That means you're moving, though, from despair to agitation, to rage, and finally to the real cycle, to interrupting Cliff again. So
yeah,
it's definitely on an upswing.
Yeah, there we go. Not letting Cliff speak.
I feel normal, so shut up, Cliff. I'm finishing my point. God damn it. That's not it, Cliff. It's more.
All right, we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song, don't we?
Yes.
We're going to do a short freebie this Friday. This is going to be the shortest freebie, shortest non-freebie Friday, I think, in probably a year.
Cuck Nation.
All right, here is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. It is called, what is it called?
Trump Crazy Land.
Trump Crazy Land by Jimmy Reefer Cake from All the Hypocrisy.
This is a song. It's sung through the eyes of one of the worst people alive, I feel, the president-elect Donald Trump. Woke up in the morning, composed myself a brand new tweet. Picked a brutal third world dictator that I'd like to meet. got no clue, but this president job is pretty friggin' sweet. Just know everything's doing fine down here in Trump Crazy Land. Yeah. Well, I wear this weave on my head, 'cause my blonde hair is falling out. A tremendous big league con man, that's what I'm all about. I know you want to kick out all the Mexicans, but there's no reason to shout. Everybody gets lied to down here in Trump Crazy Land. All right. Rednecks and bikers, rednecks and bikers. KKK, Alex Jones, Republicans, rednecks and bikers, rednecks and bikers, independents, Biden 2020, it's a sloppy Joe, a slop, sloppy Joe, why not? Sloppy Joe, a slop, sloppy Joe, river, sloppy Joe, a slop, sloppy Joe, yeah! Sloppy Joe, man, a sloppy Joe. Well, I dreamt one morning that I woke up to see that a big Joe Biden was looking at me. He screamed, "You can't defeat me just because I'm old." I said, "I live in the White House. You do what you're told." Then the left and right started joining the fight, and the media pushed me with all of his might. And then Rand Paul slapped me and he kicked me in the head. It's called revenge, little Donnie, said the FBI head. I said, "What did I do to make you all so mad?" They said, "You eat some Tic Tacs, man, your breath is bad." Then the Green Party said, "You better run and hide." But my man Bill Clinton came and drew my side. He said, "If it wasn't for Hillary, Bernie would have beat you. You should be shaking her hand and saying, 'Pleased to meet you.' You acted like throwing her in jail was your goal. You should be kissing her feet and her CNN mole. Now all the angry pundits, just leave me alone, and we can all live together in this happy home with Joe Biden. Yeah, a sloppy Joe, it's a sloppy Joe, a sloppy Joe. I'm talking about sloppy Joe, Joe Biden 2020. It's a sloppy Joe, sloppy Joe." Well, me and Joe Biden got married, 'cause Supreme Court says gay marriage is fine down here in Trump Crazy Land. Ah.
Hey, what happened?
There you go. Wow, that was
epic.
Was that a Biden endorsement? I actually don't understand.
I think part of it is there was like a form and function type of quality to it, where like the idea was that inside Donald Trump's head, it's a big jumbled mess.
It's a total mess.
And for those of you who, like Michael, weren't big Adam Sandler fans, that was a cover of Lunch Lady Land.
Ah, okay. Now, right. now it's clear to me.
Yeah, because Adam Sandler's
a
mess.
The weird part to me was that it was sung through the eyes of Donald Trump. Because generally, you don't sing through your eyes.
That's how I
see
the world.
All right, folks. We're going to take a break, head into the fun half. The number is 646-257-3920. If you are listening to the program live and want to call in, I will take your IMs. Don't forget, it's your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member of The Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com. Want to give a gift of The Majority Report? Go to majoritygift.com. Majoritygift.com for all your Majority Report gift-giving needs. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. That's also a great gift. We have so many gifts for you to give. You buy your crap from Amazon or Jet.com, do so at MajorityReportKickback.com. We need you to join the show just so I could pay for all these URLs.
That's what Sam does all day. He goes, I can't believe what he tweeted. That was so stupid. I'm in a fight with a guy in Idaho and then buy domains all afternoon. God damn it.
Guy in Idaho is a moron.
You
guy
are a moron.
.com.
Oh, we should get majority slash guy in Idaho sucks slash be practical but progressive.
I got guy in Ohio is dot a moron. I've got the ICANN to actually do an amoron.
That's slash amoron.org.
Also, you can join our newsletter at majority.fm. Leave us a review on iTunes. We haven't done that in a long time.
I usually do that on Mondays, actually. But right, yes, do that.
All right, folks. See you in the fun half.